Sean, Mitch Marner has a 20-game point streak. Toronto Maple Leafs record. He's got 27 points in that streak. The Leafs don't lose. They pretty much just, they at least they get a point, right? Maybe they lose, they get a point. They're 9-0-3 in their last 12. Marner's been terrific. Is he the MVP of the NHL right now?
No, the guy he beat last night, Jason Robertson's the MVP of the league, I think. But he's the MVP of the Maple Leafs, and I said that last week, and I believe you might have chuckled at me a little bit. But I don't think that's the case anymore. He is their most valuable player. The things he does at both ends of the ice are just unbelievable. The most amazing thing is at 20 games, it's two past the record. One of the people that holds that record is Ed Olczyk. We're having a different Olczyk on as a guest this week. Nick Olczyk from the Seattle Kraken. And so there's a little foreshadowing there. But he's at 20 games. He's not even halfway to the NHL record. Another thing that Wayne Gretzky's done that's just mind-boggling.
Well, I mean, yeah, let's not go there, right? I mean, let's not go there. But you said something about Marner there that really caught my attention, and it's something that I want to hit on. It's what he does at both ends of the ice, right? I mean, so we talk a lot, the production is out of this world, right? We know how good he is offensively and how good the Leafs are offensively, to be honest with you. But like, for example, as we record this on Wednesday, they just beat the Dallas Stars 4-0, and they had to kill, I think it was 7 power plays in that game, right? I mean, like the Leafs, they were a little, you know, penalty happy in that game, especially, you know, through the first two periods. And Dallas had 7 opportunities on the power play. They got 17 shots on the power play. You think about it. I mean, 17 shots on 7 power plays, it's 2.5 shots per power play. Okay. You can almost live with that, right? Marner played almost 6 minutes shorthanded. He was terrific. And I think that's what it is about Marner, is the maturity. We always talk about maturity in a game, like the guy's mature, you know, how his game has gone to another level. And in fact, I'm, you know, going to be doing a story on Jack Hughes from the Devils about that, like the little details within his game. We all know the skill, right? And Marner, we all know how good he is offensively, but I think that's where the maturity is in Marner's game. And it's been there probably for a while. It's just maybe that we're noticing it more now, or I'm noticing it more now, but I mean, it's what he does at both ends of the ice. He's not just a guy who's going to be a productive point producer for you. He's killing penalties and killing them effectively. And he's all over the place doing so. But that's the area that, if you focus in on Marner's game, where that maturity has come in.
And he's always been overshadowed, right? Like, the most dynamic goal scorer in the league plays on his team, right? And he's a superstar. And ask Austin Matthews, like, he's all over the TV. He's a Connor McDavid type player. You know, Mitch Marner's a Leon Draisaitl type player. Like, he's the sidekick, right? And, you know, it's a kind of like Marchand and Bergeron in Boston, the same kind of thing. Like, and I think you have to put him in that conversation of, you know, entering into the sulky, right? Like, he's so good in his own end that you definitely have to put him in that elite level with the Barkovs. You know, people want to start throwing Nico Hischier in there, Stone, whoever you want to put in there. Like, if you're not putting Marner in there, you're making a mistake. And I think those players have become more and more valuable. You see some of the scores, right, that are happening in this league now, and defense is at a premium, whether it's bad goaltending, whatever it is. You're seeing 7-6 games, 6-5 games, 3-4 goal comebacks. If you have a shutdown player that can also get you points, they're worth their weight in gold.
Mm-hmm. He's not just, I'll look at his penalty, you know, his penalty kill. I mean, he's playing 3 minutes a game on the PK, and it's not a bad PK. They're 80%. I mean, they're right there. That's pretty good, right? I mean, like, maybe they could be a little bit better, but yeah, I agree with you. Like, Marner's game has taken off. It's taken to another level. You're right. Sidekick, this, that, and the other. He's not anymore. I mean, he is his own superstar. Now, it's just like Draisaitl is. He's his own superstar. And maybe if you're an opponent preparing for the Maple Leafs, the first guy you're looking at is Matthews, because you know he can beat you with a shot from anywhere, right? I mean, that's what you're probably doing. But coaches are not taking too long to hit on Marner and exactly how he can beat you either. I mean, you think about this too. The point, the streak, he's the fourth active player with a streak of at least 20 games. Point streak. Patrick Kane had 26 in the 2015-16 season. Crosby had 25 in the 2010-11 season, and Paul Stastny had 20 in 06-07. So it's the longest streak for a player since 15-16, active player since 15-16. It's remarkable what he's doing, and the Leafs keep plugging along. They just keep finding a way. Beating the Dallas Stars in Dallas 4-0, holding Jason Robertson off the score sheet, that's a character win. That's an impressive win. And here's the thing. I want to say, I really do. I want to say, like, this feels different for Toronto. Can't say it yet, man. Just that they haven't earned that. They got to get to the playoffs before we can even, and win around before it can feel any different, right? I mean, you want to say all the things in Marner's game and his, and the maturity in it and how they're winning games and the goaltending has been really good and we should hit on Matt Murray. I can't say it feels different yet. It's just because we've seen the Leafs do this before.
There's wins that you look at and you're like, oh, that's a really good win. And then there's wins that you look at and you're like, I'm not so sold on that. I'm not so sold on this win. You talk about it being a character win. Like, yeah, they won. They gave up 45 shots, 15 more than they managed. They blocked 27 more shots. Like, that's 71 shot attempts without even thinking about what was missed. Like, Matt Murray bailed them out. Right. They took 7 penalties. The Stars only took 2. At one point, they were down 2 guys late in the second period. And then somebody broke their stick. And I can't remember who it was at the moment. It might have been Marner. And so it was really a 5-on-2.5. And they didn't score because of Murray and because of their penalty kill. But if I'm Sheldon Kennedy, like, I'm walking out of there. Sheldon Keefe, sorry. I'm walking out of there with a big smile on my face. Not because I'm happy, but because I stole 2 points. Like, that's what they did. They stole 2 points and they got a goaltender to do it. And they have to be over the moon about that because, my God, they need goaltending. If this is who the Toronto Maple Leafs are, they're going to need goaltending to be good.
Yeah. And I say character win because they kind of answered their own mistakes, right? I mean, they made up for things that were going against them, penalties, you know, possession time or whatever. And they were able to still withstand that. That's why it's a little bit of a character. You're not going to play a perfect game. You're not going all the time. You're not going to just blow a team out all the time, even though on the score sheet, it looks like they did. They had to earn it and they had to fight for it and they had to answer some of their own mistakes. And they did, but you've touched on Murray and we should, I mean,
before we get to that, Dan, you play that game in the playoffs, you're not getting out of the first round.
Well, that's why I can't say it's any different.
Like, so you want to talk all you want about character wins and how maybe they're different. Like, if that's the game you play in the first round against whoever you play, have fun golfing.
Mm-hmm. No, that's why I can't say it's any different right now for the Toronto Maple Leafs. They obviously, you know, we know too much. We know too much about what they are. They have to prove to us what they can be. And, you know, I mean, we're talking here on December 7th. They're not going to get an opportunity to do that for several more months, but they're putting themselves in a position to have that opportunity. And that's all you can do if you're Toronto right now is do that. And Matt Murray has been terrific. 44 saves against the Stars. This dude's not, he's 6-1-2. He's got a 2.34 goals against and a 932 save percentage in 9 games. Now he was hurt for a lot of it, right? So he's come back. He's been very strong. Is Matt Murray back, Sean? I mean, is he back to being the goalie he was when he was winning the Stanley Cup twice with the Pittsburgh Penguins, who, by the way, I don't even think he was like, he was never their MVP type goalie, right? He never meant to them what Marc-Andre Fleury did at times. He just was the goalie in net who was getting the job done with a great team in front of him. Is Matt Murray, is he back to being good enough now?
Yeah, if this is who he is, he's good enough. And if he can stay healthy, he's good enough. Again, we talk track records and his track record hasn't been great since the Cup wins. I mean, he hasn't been healthy. There's been flaws in his game, but he looks really good right now. And if he can continue and build his confidence and stay healthy, which has been the biggest bugaboo for him, then yeah, he's a playoff level goalie. Like, he knows how to win around. Which is what the Toronto Maple Leafs need and want. He's proven that, but he's got to get to the finish line.
Yeah, he does. And if you're a Leafs fan, you probably want to buy into Matt Murray, but you're probably doing it with a lot of trepidation. You know, you're probably just hesitating a little bit to do it because of his injury history.
Dude, if you're buying in, you better have some disposable income. You better not be using, you better not be living paycheck to paycheck and putting your money on this because it's a, it's a high risk, high reward bet.
Yeah.
You might win a lot of money, but you might go hungry.
There's a lot in life for the Leafs right now. Like, you know, everybody talks about them and how they're rolling along, and I'm praising what they're doing. We're doing all that, but it comes with a butt, right? I mean, it comes with like a hesitation because they just, it's just who they've been. And it's unfortunate for them, but that's the way it goes. You know, I mean, it's unfortunate for their fans that they have, you want to feel great, but then, you know, in the back of your mind, you're like, I mean, how great can I feel? This is in April. This is December.
Yeah, no, and I have to do Toronto for the Super 16. I don't know how it turned out. I don't know where they came in the Super 16, but I don't have them relatively high considering what their record suggests. I think they have the sixth best record in the NHL. I don't have them at six, and I have to write, you know, why I like them, why I put them where they are, and it's kind of a mixed bag. Like, it's glass half full and glass half empty at the same time. Like, you can look at it either way, and you can be like, oh yeah, all these great things are happening. And then you can look at it, you know, with that cynic's eye and say, oh, well, yeah, I want to believe, but I can't believe because of A, B, and C. And you know, we've touched on them, you know, A, is their goaltending good enough? B, is if, are there enough people pulling on the rope in the same way? And C, are they learned enough, disciplined enough to be an elite team and not revisit some of the problems they've had before? You know, taking seven penalties against two in a game suggests that maybe that's still a problem. I don't know, but I am not sold. And I am not taking, I live paycheck to paycheck. I'm not taking my paycheck and investing it on this team.
Look, I'm glad you brought up the Super 16 because I got to give you some credit here. You're bullish on how you do your Super 16. Every week is, you know, like, it's, you're not married to results necessarily. And I give you credit for that. I do it a little bit differently, and that's the beauty of it. I mean, we do it, people have their own, you know, thoughts and opinions. I've seen enough through the course of 25 to 30 games to understand what a team might be this season. And we do the Super 16 in the regular season. So that's kind of my barometer. Like, I think I've seen enough. Like, I've seen enough of the New Jersey Devils to believe that they're for real. I think I've seen enough of the Toronto Maple Leafs to believe they are one of the best teams in the league. And they are. They have to prove it in the playoffs. But for right now, I think they are. You had the Colorado Avalanche, and we wanted to get to the Avalanche here. You had the Avalanche fourth in your Super 16. Now, that's based on history, and I give you credit for that, right? I mean, you're bullish on that. But the Avalanche right now, Nathan McKinnon's out 4 weeks with an upper body injury. They don't have Landeskog. They don't have Nichushkin, Manson, Byron, Lehkonen, Helm, all out. Kadri's gone. Burakovsky's gone. Kemper's gone, right? You look at the team that won the Stanley Cup versus the team they're putting on the ice right now, and it is not even close. It's not even close. So I give you credit for continuing to buy the Avalanche and what they are and what they can be. But at some point, is this too much? Like, can they withstand the McKinnon injury now to where they can stay in the race and have the ability when these guys come back to go on a run to get them in it all the way? Is it too much, Sean?
Well, clearly, if I have him four, I don't
think you don't believe it is, right?
I don't think it's too much. Look, they still have Cale Makar, right? Like, they have an elite defense.
Yeah, but the Sharks have Erik Karlsson.
Yeah, well, the Colorado Avalanche, even with the 22 forwards that they've used, are probably deeper than the San Jose Sharks. And that's the difference. Look, they're still hanging around in the race, and you know, part of this is a snapshot of now. Like, if it was just a snapshot of now, you run the standings. Super 16's the standings. The Devils are the best team in hockey right now. That's what the record says. So don't worry about it. Put them number one. I don't have them number one. I have them number three. I think Boston blows their doors off in a playoff series.
Well, I have Boston one. I have Boston one.
I think Vegas blows their doors off in a playoff series.
Not buying that one.
Because they're better teams. They're more battle-tested. They're more ready for what's going to come. It's still early. Like, we're still part of the Buffalo syndrome here. Like, Buffalo's been good this deep into a season before, and then the wheels have fallen off. And I'm not saying that's going to happen for New Jersey, but you need to show me more, right? Colorado doesn't need to show me anymore. And I think right now, Colorado beats Toronto in a playoff series.
Not with the team they're putting on the ice right now. Vegas went through this last year. Everybody loved Vegas, right? They were going to run away with the Pacific Division. They were going to be the team that you know, in the West that challenges with the fights with Colorado to be the team that goes to the Stanley Cup final. They had all those injuries that they had to deal with throughout the entire course of the season. They did not make the playoffs. Now, they had a pedigree, right? I mean, change things up, no question about it, but they have guys who have won before with them, not a Stanley Cup, but had gotten deep. They had other guys like Petrangelo they brought in. He's a Stanley Cup champion. They went through all those injuries and they couldn't quite overcome it. I'm not saying the Avalanche are not going to be able to overcome it. I still think they will be able to overcome it and be a playoff team and be dangerous. But at some point, you got to say, Uncle. As Jared Bednar said, they're losing a player a game, and they're impact players that they're losing. They haven't played a game yet without Nathan MacKinnon, in addition to not having Landeskog, Nichushkin, Manson, Byram, Lekin, and all these guys, right? McKinnon's their heart and soul. He's the guy that drives everything. He's been a guy that keeps them going. Now he's out 4 weeks. Vegas went through this last year and couldn't overcome it. And that is the fear that you have if you're the Avalanche right now, is what's happening to them is what happened to Vegas last year.
One, they still have their goalie,
who's never won.
But he's healthy and he's playing well, and he's going to help get them through this. Vegas didn't have their goalie. Vegas lost their goalie. Like, you lose your goalie in the NHL and you're done. Like, that's it. That's when you say, Uncle, you wave. You can plug and play until you get some of these guys back, right? And two, what were we saying in April? Oh, boy, if Vegas makes it, if they somehow find a way to get in at that 8 seed, watch the heck out for them, because they're going to be a train in the playoffs. They're getting healthy. They're figuring it out. Logan Thompson's this, Logan Thompson's that. You watch out. You don't want to play that Vegas team if they get in. That was the refrain, right? Like, all you got to do if you're Colorado is get in. There's no style points. There's no anything. Like, just survive. Survive in advance. And I think they can do it. I still think they can do it. And until the results show that they can't, like, they're basically muddling along at 500 with a 50% AHL team. So you're telling me when they're healthy that they're not an elite team in this league? But with all that said, can I get to something else that totally flew under the radar about Colorado? And I'm still flabbergasted about it. And my head's been spinning for days about it. They played all Boston right. The other day. Best against best. The Bruins coach, Jim Montgomery, asked about Cale Makar. Says he's Bobby Orr. Says he could be the next Bobby Orr.
Mm-hmm.
I love Cale Makar. I think Cale Makar is an amazing player. I could watch him skate all day and all night and never go to bed and wake up the next day and do it again. Like, he can skate like nobody's business, and he can control the puck like nobody else. Is he head and shoulders above every other defenseman in this league? No. Is he 30 points better than every other defenseman in this league? No. Has he changed the face of the position? No. How? And Jim Montgomery is a far better hockey man than I am. Far better. Like, way more experience, seen way more players, been involved at the highest level. And I understand wanting to call out an elite player, and I think we should. We should make stars out of all of them. That's a bridge too far for me, Dan.
You're right. I mean, look.
And the Boston media, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You would have thought it was the greatest thing that was ever said in the history of mankind.
I'm sure. I get what Jim Montgomery is saying. He's saying that he could be the Bobby Orr of today, right, of this generation.
But he's not.
Nobody is. Nobody will be.
But even if you want to just do it like this generation, like, Bobby Orr was head and shoulders above every – there wasn't another defenseman. You didn't look at the NHL and say – Bobby Orr and this guy. Let's argue about it. Let's do a state your case. Who's better?
Yeah.
Who's going to do that? Who's going to pick Larry Robinson? I'm just picking a name.
I understand.
Who's going to pick the other guy and be like, you know what? I can make that argument. I'm a good debater. I'm going to make that. There was no argument to be made. He was the Wayne Gretzky of defensemen. Is Cale Makar the Wayne Gretzky of defensemen? Is he even the Sidney Crosby of defensemen? You could argue that Erik Karlsson is his equal. You could argue that Victor Hedman is his equal, if not better, in a different way. There's equals there.
I agree.
To be the player that is the man, you have to be the man. You have to beat the man. He hasn't beaten the man yet. Like,
he's never going to. He's never going to. And it, the first person to tell you that it will never happen will be Cale Makar. Okay? He will be the first to tell you that. And he will tell it to you over and over and over again, probably for the rest of his life, that he could never be Bobby Orr. This is like when people say, you know, it's the same, like, oh, you know, he's like Gretzky. If Gretzky never scored a goal, he would still have the most points in the National Hockey League history. If he never scored a goal and he has all time, he's got the all-time record for goals. There's generational players, and then there's all-century, all-time players, right? No one's touching Gretzky. No one's touching Bobby Orr. It's never going to happen. Cale Makar is the Bobby Orr style skater of the NHL today. Like, that's what he is. And I get what Jim Montgomery's saying. He's pumping his tires. He's pumping them up, right? He's pumping them up. And you're right. We all should. We should pump these guys up. They deserve it. Makar is an amazing player. He is a terrific hockey player. Bobby Orr changed the game. He's not – Bobby Orr changed the game so there can be a Cale Makar, okay? That's – so, no. It's – I can see you're all angry about this, but I think that's all your New England ties that get you all angry about this.
No, I'm not angry about it. I just wanted to get it into the record because nobody, like, the thing that shocked me is nobody was like, no.
Well,
nobody, not even in Boston, they weren't like, no.
That's crazy that
they were like, oh, isn't this cute? Like, it's not cute.
You said enough. You said it. You said it better than I ever could. It's no, he's not Bobby Orr. Anyway, you know what? I think Nick Olczyk might be Eddie. Could he be Eddie?
He's working on it.
He's working on it. He's got the same cadence.
He could be a generational voice.
Generational voice. Well, Nick Olczyk, not Eddie, Nick Olczyk, who's on the Seattle Kraken broadcasts, was kind enough to join us, talk a little Kraken. So let's play that interview. All right, Sean, here's the interview with Nick Olczyk. Nick, thanks so much for joining us. So I guess we'll start right in with the Seattle Kraken. I know they're coming off a loss against Montreal, but this is way better than I think any of us thought they'd be. Why? What are they doing? Why are they better?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the depth that the Kraken have, both up front, on the back end, and at the goaltender position. You look how they've gotten contributions from pretty much every line. A lot of guys well on their way to career seasons. You're getting some great performances from a couple of the young guys. I think Matty Beniers has really arrived in a big way. And it's, I think it's numbers aside too. It's just the full 200 foot game that he's playing. It's been a pretty amazing here so far for Andrei Burakovsky, 26 points already for him. And again, you just look at the depth of scoring. And I think that's been a real key as far as doing it by committee. Are there any superstar top five players in the league on this team? No. But when this team has been good, is that they're getting contributions and everybody's pitching in. So that allows head coach Dave Hakstol to be able to roll lines, to be able to not have to just focus on one line. And I think at the end of the day, it really comes down to if your first line isn't going, or they're having a tough night, or the puck just isn't bouncing their way, he knows that he can go to his second and third line to be able to have those guys try and contribute. So I think at least from the offensive side of thing, the biggest difference from this year to last year has been now that you have a couple more guys that can finish around the net front. And that's a huge tip of the cap to Ronnie Francis and his staff for being able to go out and get a guy like Andrei Burakovsky or trade for a guy like Oliver Bjorkstrand, who only has the 2 goals this year. But he's been doing some incredible things on the defensive side and helping a couple of the younger guys along. So long-winded, the biggest difference, I would say, is just the ability now that they have more guys, a more quantity of players that can put the puck in the back of the net.
It's amazing how smart a coach is when he has some pieces to work with.
Exactly.
And part of that, and I think it's so undersold when you watch, and maybe not for the past two games because there's been a little bit of leakage. But to me, this defense is completely underrated. When you look at the pieces, I mean, there's some really good players there that are on, you know, second, third teams. But the way it all kind of meshes together, from Larson to Dunn, who's kind of been the offensive guy for them, to some of those depth guys, is it a defense that's really bigger than its parts, maybe?
I would say so. And I think the way that they have the D pairings set up is very in tune with modern day hockey, right? Because you want that offensive guy paired with more of the stay-at-home defensive defenseman. And you bring up that great pairing of Dunn and Larson, who's kind of been the go-to pair for this team this year, where you got Vince Dunn, who is going to jump into the play. He's going to activate from the blue line, and he knows that he's got Adam Larson that's going to be there to stay back for him and to cover for him. Now, it's not to say Adam Larson has never jumped into the play all year, because he certainly has been able to do that on a couple of different occasions and be pretty darn effective of it. But it's such a predictability with your defense partner, similarly to the forward line, right? Being able to anticipate and predict what your line mates are going to do before they do it, so everybody's in a good defensive position or on the offensive side of things. But then you look at the other pairing of Jamie Oleksiak and Justin Schultz, again, more of a traditional stay-at-home D with more of an offensive guy. And then Carson Soucy and Will Borgen has been a pairing, I think, that I don't think maybe has gotten enough credit around the National Hockey League, where, I mean, you look at a lot of their advanced stats. I mean, these guys are high up. And, you know, this is a shutdown pair. Guys that when you send over the boards, you know that they're not going to allow very much. Are they going to bring a lot on the offensive side? Maybe not. But that's going to be a defense pairing that is going to be able to suffocate a lot in the D zone, spend less time there, get the puck up to the forwards and allow them to do their thing on the offensive side. So I think collectively as a D-core, you got a lot of different guys that can play different ways. And especially in those top two pairings, you get a real big, solid, strong stay-at-home D like a Larson or like an Oleksiak paired with guys with some offensive flair like Dunn or Schultz. It just gives you a different look. And I think Justin Schultz, I mean, he's been red hot in terms of points lately, contributing on the offensive side. And of course, we all know how important those right-handed puck moving defensemen are.
So you hit on so many good points there, right? When you talk about the forwards, the depth they have there, the D, you know, the pairs, the way they're together. One thing we haven't talked about is goaltending, though. And that's where it comes in. That's where the question comes in. Is this sustainable? Is what the Kraken are doing sustainable this season? Is the goaltending good enough? And so I'll put that out there to you. I mean, we know they have NHL goalies, but is this team going to be undone by goaltending, or is the goaltending stable enough in your mind?
Well, I think when you look at that position specifically, it was a tough year last year for Philip Grubauer. The reason why they went out and got Martin Jones is because Chris Drieger suffered a torn ACL injury at the World Championships in the summer. And he's actually working his way back right now and hopefully should be back sooner than later. So it's been great to see him around the rink. But they've needed both guys. And when Philip Grubauer was out earlier in the year on LTIR, Martin Jones came in and was unbelievable, where he played like 12 games in a row and did more than just give his team a chance to win. So I think moving forward, we're going to either see a guy take the net, or it's going to continue to be kind of sharing of the wealth. But you look at a couple of the games recently where the Kraken have given up 5 goals and then 4 goals last game. Like, other than the first goal, a lot of these goals I would not put on the goaltender. Cross seam passes where the puck goes from one side of the ice to the other and then back. Tough for a goaltender to be able to make that stop or make that read. But look, I mean, these guys have proven at points this year, when the team is defensively sound in front of them, that they can do the job. So look, you know, I think it's an interesting situation. But at times this year, both guys being Philip Grubauer and Martin Jones have proven that they can steal a win, have proven that they can keep their team in a game and make a timely save. So to answer the question, I think it comes down to more so the guys in front of them who have done really well at certain times of the year. And hopefully they can keep that going and try and keep the puck out of the back of their net.
Nick, obviously you're around this team all the time. You talk to Dave Hextall a lot. You spoke earlier about Matty Berniers and how well he's been. There's another highly touted rookie on this team in Shane Wright, and there were high expectations for him. I don't know that they've been met. He scored last night against he scored his first goal last night after coming back from the AHL, where he had 4 goals in 5 games. But, you know, do you have a sense, being around them all the time, you know, what his immediate future looks like and what he needs to do to be more of an impact player on that team?
Well, I think last night, that first period, he really could have had 2 goals, which is, you know, maybe 3, which is kind of the crazy part, and what a welcome back that would have been. But of course, baby steps, right? Let's just start with one. And it was a beautiful play, but the opening 20 minutes last night, he had no hesitation in his game. He was making plays. He was carrying the puck. He was battling. He was in good positions. And of course, yeah, he gets the first goal in the National Hockey League, which every kid dreams of. And it was great. And you saw the celebration. And if you didn't, I would highly recommend to look it up, because that was a lot of energy coming out of that young man. So it was great to see him get that first goal. As far as the future goes, while obviously that decision is very much above my pay grade, and then I know there's a lot of talk about world juniors. I think that'd be an incredible opportunity for him to go and represent his country. But I think last game is a big building block for him, especially that first period where he was, you could probably say he was maybe the best forward on the ice for both teams, where he was impacting the play at both ends of the ice, especially in the middle of the ice too, where he made a couple of great reads, broke up some plays, and turned a little bit of defense into offense. But it's slow and steady for him right now. I know everything that happened at the draft, and where he's been the most highly touted prospect for, you know, the last couple of years, and rightfully so for all the great things he's done in his career so far. But looking forward, I think the one thing that I look for in Shane Wright is the attitude that he has. And from day one in camp, day one from the draft, like the one thing that has really, I wouldn't say surprised me, but the thing I've been most impressed with has been the great attitude that he's had every day. And it wasn't, I've never gotten the sense from Shane Wright that he thinks he's too big to be playing on the third or fourth line, or that he's too big or to go down to the American Hockey League and play for the Coachella Valley Firebirds. This is a kid that's been working his rear end off like none other, before practice, during practice, and after practice. But it's just been that outlook of, I'm not just happy to be here, but I'm trying to get better. I want to get better. I want to be a staple in that lineup. And I think last night was a great step. It was a great step. Now, the next part of that is consistency, right? What separates the average players from the great players in the National Hockey League is that it's not just one game. It's not just one good period or one shift. It's consistently, all the time, earning that trust from your coach. So as far as what the future holds, again, I know there's been a lot of talk, but I think staying in the moment for this guy, that was a really big game for him. Aside from just the goal, that's great. That's everybody's dream to get your first goal in the National Hockey League. But I think a lot has been building up to that. And it starts with the outlook and the mentality that he has, and hopefully a little bit more confidence now on the goal scoring side of things. And the last thing I'll say on him is, and I think this goes for any young player, when you get to the National Hockey League and you're not the guy who's trusted on power play 1, on line 1, and all you've ever done in your career growing up was be the guy, and you get to the league and you're not the guy at that moment in time, how do you get confidence, right? Because for a player like that, when all he did was put up points, it's kind of like, oh, I had a hat trick last game. Good game. I feel good. Next game, no points. Don't feel good. A little bit less confidence. And we go into the next game. So how do you build some energy? How do you build that all-important confidence to be able to play your game? So that was a great point. Goes down to Coachella Valley. Gets 4 goals in 5 games. And in his first period back up this year, he gets the goal. By the way, playing on a line with guys who have played over 800 games combined, Yanni Gourde, Oliver Bjorkstrand, I think that was a big help for him, especially in the D zone and communication. So all in all, that should be a really big confidence builder last game for Shane. And for whatever happens moving forward, hopefully that game against the Montreal Canadiens was kind of a way of unlocking both his confidence and ability and skill moving forward.
It's a great answer. I love all that you were saying about Shane Wright. I really do. But enough about them and enough about the Kraken. Let's talk about you. All right. What's this move to Seattle been like for a Chicago kid coming in here to Seattle? And are you living with the old man or not?
So we got a we've got a place here. And when he jets in and out of town, he's got a place to bunk. And when he does come in, the bed's all neat, the laundry's done, the dry cleaning is in the closet, hanging in the plastic. The dishes are all in the cabinets, washed and nice. But it's been great. It was obviously an extremely emotional summer for our family in a lot of different ways. And it's scary moving to a new place, right? A new team. Yeah. A new fan base. And obviously, you know, anybody who's part of a team, a broadcast or whatever it is, you know, the first hope is that you just go and you try to be yourself and you try to prove that you know a little bit about the game and hopefully you can win some people over along the way. And the fans here have been unbelievably welcoming. They got some of the best fans in all of hockey here in terms of people that are passionate, in terms of people that know the game and show up and show out for this Kraken organization, not just the team on the ice, but all the other events that the Kraken hosts out in the community as well. But I think for our family, it's been a great adjustment. A little bit more rain here, which is not bad. I got my got a lot of my rain jackets because I found here in Seattle, umbrellas are kind of outlawed. And I found that out at the grocery store about a week into getting here. I'm checking out and I'm walking out and I start to open the umbrella as it's just pouring outside. And the lady in the grocery store stops me and she goes, you're not from around here, are you? I go, how'd you know? And she looks down at my umbrella and she goes, we don't use those here. So I said, oh, okay. No biggie at all. But it's been all in all, it's been an incredible time. Everybody around the team, Todd Lewicki, the CEO, team president Victor DeBonis, head of our broadcasting and marketing, and she does a little bit of everything, Katie Townsend. Everybody has just been so incredibly welcoming. Anything we've needed, they've been there for us. It's a beautiful, beautiful place to live. And I think for me specifically, I've been more comfortable. And I've enjoyed life here quicker than I thought I would. So looking forward to getting back home to Chicago for the holidays. But ever since getting here on August 26th, I have thoroughly enjoyed it. There's some incredible people here in Seattle, and everything else aside, it's been a very smooth move. And when the team on the ice is playing like this and makes my life a little bit more enjoyable to talk about, that certainly is a big plus as well.
I need to figure out how to get umbrellas banned in New York City. We definitely need to work on that. I'm an anti-umbrella guy too, so I could live in Seattle. You also got our Dan and I's old boss out there running the editorial for .com, and Bob Condor. He used to tell us what to do. So
great guy. Great guy.
I really want to know what the apartment looks like the other 20 days of the month. Right, you got a good bachelor pad running there, don't you?
No, we got a great setup here. Live in a suburb just outside of downtown, right over Lake Washington, in an area called Bellevue, and lots to do, plenty of great food, plenty to spend a paycheck on, which you got to be careful of. And but yeah, no, it's just it's an awesome area out here, and really could not be more thrilled with our setup, with the place we're working, and the team, and just everybody. I mean, people out here have been so kind, and I think when you're the new guy, all you can ask for is people that are just nice, right? I mean, that could be in my situation, could be in anybody's situation whenever you go somewhere new. So I've been just thrilled with how this team does things first class. And that's not even me going out of my way to say it. It's just how the Kraken do it, from the front office to the hockey operations to everybody. They just do things the right way, and they do it because that's the way things should be done, for no other reason. So it's been an amazing time so far, and it's been a lot of fun watching this team and talking about this team. But really, our family, the Olchek family, could not be more thrilled to be here, and hoping for a lot of great years to come.
Yeah, Nick, it sounds good. It looks good. They're fun to watch. You're great to listen to as well. Thanks so much for joining us. And make sure that on the, you know, the 10 to 12 days that your father's actually in Seattle, he's paying the bills. All right.
You got it. I make sure that the credit card numbers stay correct and accurate. So that's the one that gets charged. Don't worry.
Awesome, Nick. Thanks for the time. Enjoy the run. It's been fantastic. And I'm sure it's going to get more exciting as the games get bigger.
Absolutely. Dan, Sean, thank you guys very much. Huge fan of what you guys do. So keep up the great work as well.
Great stuff there from Nick Olchek. Sounds a lot like Eddie. Let's talk Shane right here for a second, Sean. I am of the belief, and I know there's the world juniors, not world juniors. I am of the belief that if you're in the National Hockey League, you're in the NHL, that you shouldn't go play in the World Junior Championship. I'm not saying there's zero benefit to playing in the World Juniors. There probably is. But I think there's more benefit for a player like Shane Wright to be around the National Hockey League, to not miss 3 weeks of NHL play, to even if you're only playing 10 or 11 minutes a night, right? And I think he should be playing. And even if he goes down to the AHL, you know, you get some time there. I just think to be around, to be available in the NHL, you're playing here, you're a pro, you benefit a lot from just being around the National Hockey League, getting into games and all that. I don't think he should go play for Canada in the World Juniors. Shane Wright's probably go, well, I got an opportunity to play for Canada in the World Juniors. I want to go do that, right? I think the benefit of being in Seattle is greater than the benefit of playing in the World Juniors.
Well, that's because you hate the World Juniors.
Hate's a strong word.
You don't find any value in it. You don't think
any is much, a strong word.
You don't think it's much of a tournament.
Much is a strong word. Tournament's a strong word.
These are all true statements. You're an NHL snob. You have no use for any other level of hockey, and they are all inferior to the NHL product.
Not true. I think if Shane Wright were to go down to the AHL and play a couple more games, that would be okay too.
Why? That's not the NHL. It's a lower form of hockey, in your opinion. And I would make this argument. At least four of the World Junior teams could play in the NHL, in the AHL right now.
Okay.
It's a 19-year-old tournament. 19-year-olds aren't allowed to play in the AHL because of the CHL rules. If you're not in the NHL, you got to play in the CHL.
Right, unless you're on a conditioning stint like Wright was.
Like Wright was, and he went down and he scored 4 goals in 5 games. But otherwise, you got to go back to your junior team, unless you're European, and then you can come and you can play in the AHL. And there's all sorts of exceptions, right? But generally, if you're a 19-year-old and you're in the Canadian Hockey League, you have to go back to your team. And we wonder, you know, how constructive that is for a player like Shane Wright, who would just dominate, right? But now you're putting together all-star teams, 18 and 19, 20-year-old all-star teams, and you're sending them to play in a condensed tournament. And I would argue that some of those teams are AHL worthy. They might be at the bottom of the AHL, but they're AHL worthy, right? And you get an opportunity to go and be a leader to get your confidence back, to do what you did in Coachella, right? He goes to Coachella, he scores 4 goals in 5 games, has a ton of shots. He's involved in the game. He's playing first line minutes. He's playing power play. He's doing all the things he's been used to his whole life. And he comes back full of confidence and he scores last night. And, you know, maybe the corner's being turned. He still only played 10 minutes. He only played 3 minutes in the third period. All of that came in the first half of the third period, stapled to the bench late. Even with them chasing the game, stapled to the bench. He's an offensive player. That's what he wants to do. He wants to be the guy that makes a difference. Now you send him to Canada. You send him to Nova Scotia, and he's the man. He's the man for Canada. The number one line, number one power play. Last minute of a game, chasing.
He's not the man. I mean, Bedard's the man. But anyway,
he's one of the men.
Fine.
And he's older and more experienced than Bedard, but he's a difference maker. He's not a difference maker in Seattle. He won't be a difference maker in Seattle for the next 3 weeks. The coach doesn't want him to be a difference maker. The coach wants him to be a plug and play guy, right? Like Shane Wright's a difference maker. That's why you drafted him. Go let him be a difference maker.
All fair points.
The NHL's there when you come back.
All fair points. There's value. I think we can end it here. I think there's more value to being on an NHL roster, being on an NHL bench during games, getting the tap, go over the bench, go over the boards, get some shifts, play. There's far more value to that for your NHL career than losing that for a couple of weeks to go play in the World Juniors. That's my opinion.
That's fine. Let me ask you one quick question before we leave this. Did you learn more writing the occasional sidebar about the New Jersey Devils when you were 23 years old or covering 5 high school football games a week?
I learned different techniques covering 5 high school football games. And I learned a lot covering the Devils too. I gained from both. I know what you're saying. I gained from both, but I also think that Shane Wright gains from practices and being around the team and getting on, getting in games and travel and seeing different arenas and going up against different opponents and all that stuff. There's a lot to gain there.
It's reps. All it is.
We'll move on. Mailbag this week. 2 questions, Sean, that I answered in my mailbag this week. It's on NHL.com right now. You can go see it. Do we start with the Kane to the Devils or do we go Binnington's antics? Let's go Kane to the Devils. All right. So that was a question. Rumors, so to speak, of Patrick Kane being linked to the Devils as, one of those trade teams. And it is intriguing. And I think one of the most intriguing things about it is the Devils could even be in the running for a player like Patrick Kane, right? I mean, that's how far they've come, that there are people are talking about Kane to the Devils. And it's interesting, like people would probably be like, oh, I would be great to see Kane play with Jack Hughes. I don't think that would be the case. I think they're very similar. I think it would be more Nico Hischier because that would be more along the line of Kane Taves, as we've seen for so many years in Chicago. But my answer was, as fun as that is to talk about, I'm going to be the party pooper here and say the Devils need to leave well enough alone right now. And it's way too early to be even thinking about that if you're in the New Jersey Devils. What say you?
Shoot off the confetti gun, Dan. We've agreed
on something. Hey, all right. There it is.
This is like Haley's comet just went by.
The first one we've agreed on, I think, on this podcast.
Yeah, Haley's comet just went by and the earth stopped and all those other things because I couldn't agree more. I love Patrick Kane. I kind of hope he goes somewhere else, and it's weird. Like, I'd love to see him finish in Chicago, but I watched that game last night against the Devils, and you're just like, oh, my God. Like, just the poor guy, like there's nothing there. Like he's still brilliant. He does things that you look at and you're like, but especially with Taze out of the lineup and you're just like, where's the help? Who's going to help this guy? And it's got to be so frustrating. And it would be awesome, for the Devils to be in play to do that. It's been a long time since they've been a player when it comes to deadline deals and acquiring players and not jettisoning them, but they're incredibly young and they're incredibly good. Like, they're going to get better. This may not be the year for them, but it's going to be a lot of fun and they're going to learn a lot. They're getting the reps. Their young players are getting the reps and they're going to be better for it. And I don't know if you mortgage the future to bring in a Patrick Kane, as entertaining as that might be, but God, would he have fun skating with that team. Oh my boy! Oh, like just the speed and the creativity. You watch some of the things the Devils do, and it is reminiscent. Kane said on Monday, Tuesday, when they played, he was asked beforehand about the Devils, and he just kept making comparisons to the Blackhawks. He's like, we lost my first year, we didn't make the playoffs, and then the second year we went to the Western Conference Final. You know, veteran coach and Joel Quenneville, and they have Lindy Ruff, and you know, they're finding their way and they're skating and all the things we've talked about. Like, how cool would it be to re-enter that? Like, everybody's always like, oh, I wish I knew what I knew then, what I know now. Well, Patrick Kane does.
Yeah.
And he could live it with the reincarnation of the team that he didn't know what was happening. He was just living it at the time. He was creating it. Now he could go back and be like, here's all the lessons I learned and almost recapture that. But I don't think it's happening. Plus, we all know he's going across the river, Dan. He's going to play with Panarin.
They got
to
be in a playoff spot to do it.
It's the New York Rangers. They do and get everything, and they deserve everything. So they'll get him.
Oh, they got to be in a playoff spot to do it. They have their own issues that we can spend an entire podcast on. But I think it's intriguing. There's no doubt about it. They're going to get Andre Palat back into this lineup eventually. They're good now. You got time. Look, injuries might happen. You know, things might happen to where you say to yourself, well, we believe we can win this year. Because you want to strike while the iron's hot. I understand what you're saying. Like, it might not be their year. It might not be this year, but they're getting there. But you also have an opportunity. You want to strike while the iron's hot. I don't think they have to mortgage the future. I don't think anybody's going to have to mortgage the future to get Kane at the deadline. I think it's going to be a fair deal for the Blackhawks, but they're not going to get a monster return here for Patrick Kane. Get a little bit more if they eat some of the contracts. And there's going to be other teams in this. He has his choice. He's going to have to decide where he wants to go, if, you know, depending on the teams in it. It's just too early. It's too early to be talking about this with the Devils and the way they're playing right now. Come to me in February. Let's talk in February. Let's see where they're at in February. Let's see where Kane's at in February, right? I mean, I think then it becomes, but I think that's the case with a lot of teams. Like, that's why this isn't going to happen.
Is there even a need?
Not right now.
Not to be facetious, because Patrick Kane's a Hall of Fame player who's not completely out of his prime. But you look at the Devils' top six, and I'm like, I'm okay.
Let me ask you this question, right? So are the Devils better right now, today, to win a championship, right? If they have Patrick Kane or, say, Dawson Mercer?
Well, one's a newfie, so we know the answer to that. No, of course they're better with Patrick Kane, but
my point. That's where the need would be.
Talking about today, like, we're not, like, you have to balance today against tomorrow. And I think the one thing that's been the hallmark of the Fitzgerald GMship is that there's been a patience, that there's been this ability to let this core grow together and to develop a chemistry and to have an identity. Like, they remind me of the Devils of 93, 94, like, that, where they all kind of grew up together and they had an identity and there was a belief in the system and all of these things. And I don't know that you mess with that. Like, I don't.
And from an ownership perspective, the key you want as an owner, right? Josh Harris and David Blitzer, which they really haven't had except for one small blip, is playoff gate, right?
Yeah.
Home games in the playoffs. And right now, with or without Patrick Kane, the Devils are on pace for that.
Yeah. And look, he would jazz things up even more. I mean, they're developing their own superstars now, but when's the last time the Devils have had a player that you say, I'm going to the Prudential Center?
They have one now.
I know they have one now, but they haven't for a long time. Yeah. So to bring in another one, and they have one now that sadly, I think a lot of people in New Jersey still don't know about. A lot of people in New Jersey don't know how great he is, but they do know how great Patrick Kane is because he's got the bling.
Well, you can read about how great Jack Hughes is on Monday when I run a story on him on NHL.com. How about that? Like, that's, that plug?
That's great. And you have the bling, so it'll be a good story.
All right. So the other mailbag question I wanted to get to before we get out of here, Sean, is Jordan Binnington. And what, the question was along the lines of, what do I think of Binnington's aggressiveness? Is it just a reaction to when he gets hit and bumped, or is it more? And I could give my answer. You can read it on .com. I'm going to talk about it, but I'm curious from your perspective, because you've had the opinion of, and I agree with you, like, you know, some guys just have to play this way, right? Like they have to, like they get energy and play with the emotion and whatnot. But I'm curious after, with the way things are going for the Blues, pretty much all season, except for, you know, I mean, they had the winning streak, but they've been so streaky. Binnington struggling too. What do you think about him doing some of the stuff that he does?
Well, my opinion is changing, and I'm not intractable, even though it seems like I am sometimes on this podcast. I can move off the spot, so to speak. Right. And I'm moving slightly off the spot because Craig Berube said it's enough. And when Craig Berube, one of the toughest, most rambunctious human beings to ever play in this league, says, you've crossed the line. You've crossed the line. And when he tells me that that player's crossed the line, I'm going to parrot that, because I am not going to go against Craig Berube because he's one of the most rambunctious people to ever play in the NHL, and he could do some horrible things to me for dissenting. So Jordan Binnington has gone a step too far, right? But with all that said, there's goalies in this league that have lived off of that, that have lived off of that anger and that frustration that you get from giving up goals, from not playing well, right? Like Tuukka Rask, one of the greatest videos in the history of YouTube, go find it.
Oh yeah.
Is when he was playing in Providence and he lost his mind and he threw a milk crate onto the ice and everything else he could find. And he was fine. He was fine the next, and everybody's like, oh yeah, he's got no control. He's going to lose it in a big game. He never did. Like, that was just his release. Like, there's been goalies. Billy Smith wanted to fight everybody. At one point, Billy Smith waved his defenseman away so he could fight a forward because he was mad that the forward was crashing his crease. And look, it's a different game. It's a different world, right? Ron Hextall, famous for his temper. There's been goalies throughout this league, throughout history, that are famous for their tempers. And if they figure out how to channel it, it makes them better. I don't know that Jordan Binnington is channeling it right now. I think there's so much frustration. There's an 889 save percentage. There's a bloated 3.42 goals against average. And other than a little bit of a run last year, late in the season to get them into the playoffs, and then before he got hurt to put them in a position where they were on even footing with the Colorado Avalanche after beating the Minnesota Wild, he hasn't been good. He hasn't been good since the Stanley Cup final. He hasn't been bad. He's been average. You're a Stanley Cup champion. You don't live with average, right? And everything's gone against him in his whole career. And then he had that taste, and he got to the mountaintop, and now he's kind of sliding down, and he's trying to get purchase, and he's trying to get back up, and he's trying to be the player that he became and that he proved everybody wrong. And when you take that long of a journey, there's a lot of anger and there's a lot of bitterness and there's a lot of chip on your shoulder. And that's what fuels you. And that's what fuels Jordan Binnington, in my opinion. And I've always thought it was healthy. It's what fuels me a lot of times. Like, some people are just wired that way. But this is too much. I think your team starts to look at you and say, can we trust that guy? Like, he's losing it. He wants to fight the whole bench.
Yeah.
Like, he should be concentrating on stopping the puck. We'll take care of all that other stuff. They're crashing his crease. We'll take care of it. And that's part of it. Like, step in and take care of it. Protect your goalie a little bit. Don't make your goalie protect himself. But he's got to cool down. The whole team's got to cool down. They need to think about winning.
Yeah. I don't think Jordan Binnington waits for someone to step in for him. So I don't think he gives anybody a chance to take that extra step to jump in for him. Here's my take on this. And I think we agree on this, is, if you're playing to a 927 save percentage, this is what I wrote, right? If you're playing to a 927 save percentage, as he did in that season in 18-19 that led to that Stanley Cup run, you can get away with a lot, right? Now your emotion that you're playing with, that's fueling you, right? I mean, that's the storyline, right? That's the perspective. It's your emotion is fueling you. I even live with it if you're playing to a 9-10 or a 9-12 as he has the last couple of seasons, right? I mean, like, okay, like that's how you get yourself going, right? You play, you know what? And especially if your penalty kill and you're the best penalty killer is rolling two at 80 to 85%, whatever it is, where the Blues have been at and they've lived at for a long time under Craig Berube, you can get away with it. When you're playing to an 890 and your PK is 65%, I agree with Craig Berube. Stop the puck. Just stop the puck. Do your job. Don't try to do the job of five others. Do your job. And when you're trying to do the job of five others and the other five are not playing well, it's a big problem. You're not helping your team at all. When you're a part of what the other guys are doing, and we know that the Blues have played this hard game for a long time, right? And when you bring that as well, but you're only a part of it, now you are playing a role. Now you are helping your team. But when you're trying to do everything and your job is to stop the puck, you're not helping. It's just not working. And the other guys on the team, the skaters on the team, they just want a goalie who is going to give them a chance to win. That's all they want. Henrik Sedin told me a story that, I'm sorry, Kevin Bieksa told me a story when I was doing Hall of Fame stuff on Henrik Sedin. He told me a story that when Roberto Luongo was the captain of the Canucks, he stood up in the room after the first period of a bad period in Colorado, and he started talking all this stuff about how they were playing this, that, and the other. And Henrik Sedin, sitting in his stall, quietly lacing up his skates, looked up and said, "Just stop the puck, Lou. Just stop the puck. That's it. That's all these guys want. They want their goalie to stop the puck. They don't want their goalie chirping the bench as he's getting pulled from the game, because you know what? He's not going back in for another shift. They got to deal with that." And that's what the problem is here with the Blues. Their goalie's not helping them. He's not. When he's emotional, he's got to channel it the right way. And I 100%, I'm glad Craig Berube said it, because you don't hear coaches do it all the time, right? Just stop the puck. Do your job.
Yeah, well, I think there's a frustration in St. Louis. Everybody needs to do their job. Again, it's not just Jordan Binnington, and he's the poster boy because what shows up on the highlights. Everybody wants to see the goalie chirping the bench, waving guys onto the ice, you know, trying to throw shoulders into people, hitting people with their blockers. Like, it's fun. Like, it doesn't happen. It's entertaining in a weird kind of way. Like, it's going to make the highlights because it's unique.
Yeah.
But it doesn't need to be there. Like, a team will let a goalie dance in a ring of fire if they stop the puck. You can be like the guy in Major League Baseball with your shrine and your sacrifices and everything else. If you stop the puck, like, there's some unique, strange goalies in this game. Not as many as there used to be, but there still are. And they're accepted and they're embraced because they stop the puck.
Yeah.
It's your only job. It's the only thing. Everything else is weird. Like, it's a costume. It's whatever. Like, it's not important. The only thing that's important is you stop the puck 92% of the time.
By the way, BX also said in that game that even Luongo laughed when Henrik Sedin said that, because he realized it brought a little levity to the room. Like, hey, okay, here we go. And they went out and they played a strong game, and he did stop the puck, and they did it. So it was Luongo trying to be the captain, right? And Henrik Sedin basically like, okay, we got this. Don't worry about it, right? So anyway, they got issues. Even in a 7-4 win against the Islanders, they blew a 3-goal lead, and they continue to do that, the Blues. So they got some issues there.
But let's say this. They did blow a lead, but it's endemic.
Yeah.
Around the league. What a set of games we had this week. 8-7, 7-6, 7-4. It's a golden age of offense right now. It's going to make coaches turn gray really fast. It's going to make goalies want to chirp the bench and do thousands of other things. But boy, do you want to watch the highlights every night, and you don't want to turn a game off in the third period because no lead is safe. This is fantastic hockey.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of fun. Goals are fun. They're fun. You know, like, I mean, back and forth, up and down action. It's a lot of fun. And coaches are tearing their hair out. There's no question about it. You know, goalies are not thrilled probably unless they have a good game. But like, no, it does seem like no lead is safe in the National Hockey League. And that's made it must watch every single night. And I hope this was must listen to as well, Sean.
It was, although we agreed with each other in the second half, so that wasn't as fun. It was not a wild end to the podcast like it has been to games this week. It was we were too much in agreement. I promise to do better next week, so come back and listen again.
Well, for whatever reason, come back and listen again. And until next week, enjoy the hockey.